Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live this afternoon downtown at the Pint, 109th and Jasper. We invite you by. Also, you can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. We are going to focus on Oilers past, present, and future today, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. Guests today include Terry Jones, legendary reporter from the Edmonton Sun, and a man who perhaps more than anyone else has documented the Edmonton Oilers credibly during their time in the NHL. Also, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail will update us on Eastern Conference teams. And we'll get his input on, basically the Oilers so far this year and looking into the summer. Bob Ridley, legendary play-by-play man who has been calling Medicine Hat Tiger games since 1970, I believe. And Bob knows, he knew Stan Weir as a kid. He knows everything about Medicine Hat and the Tigers. That's going to be a fun interview. Gene Principe will join us in hour two from Rogers Sportsnet. He'll talk about the Oilers and their plans for the summer. Jim Byers back again this week from the Oklahoma City Barons. Make his weekly visit to update us on the playoffs. I think they're one win away. But we'll check with Jim and get an update. And finally, later on, Jason McKee, coach of the newly crowned Spruce Grove Saints, champions of the AJHL. Congratulations to them, and they're on their way to the championship game against BC. It'd be the BCJHL winner as well. So we'll talk about that and more. It's been a busy week. Last night, the final home game for the Oilers. Tomorrow, they play on the road and wrap up the schedule. It is another last-place season, and it's done, basically. The Oilers have a lot of young guns for the future, but it's also true that the draft gives those players to losing teams, and sometimes those teams keep right on losing. Hello, New York Islanders. Hello, Columbus. In order for the Oilers to make these dark seasons matter, winning has to happen soon. And I noticed and was heartened by a quote from Andrew Cogliano this week, and he said, and I quote here, "At some point, you have to start winning. You just can't keep getting high draft picks and losing. You have to start building and start winning and start putting a winning team together." So that's going to be the theme for us over the next few weeks about how the Edmonton Oilers are going to do that, how long it's going to take them, how patient fans have to be. Those questions and more will be answered today and in the future on Nation Radio. A few tweets to get to before we get to Terry Jones. Have us some emails here. Shane says, who is eligible to play for Oklahoma City in the postseason? We do have, it's called a clear day roster for Oklahoma City, and it goes like this. Jeff Delorier and Martin Gerber are the eligible goaltenders. On defense, Brian Helmer, Kevin Montgomery, Richard Petiot. From the Oilers, currently Jeff Petrie can be sent back. Alex Plant, Jake Taylor, and Colton Tubert. The forwards are Mark Arcobello, recently signed by the Oilers. Alex Giroux. From the Oilers, Timo Hartikainen, Linus Omark, Ryan O'Mara, and Chris Van de Velde are all eligible. Milan Kitnar, Andrew Lord, Colin McDonald, Brad Moran, Ben Andres, Greg Stewart, and Zach Stortini also on that list. Defenseman Anthony Aiello and forwards Philip Cornett and Matt Marquardt are still available to practice. They can only play when an injury, recall, or a suspension occurs. So that's the update for you on Oklahoma City. As I mentioned, we'll have Jim Byers on later on in the show and talk about the playoffs. They play both tonight and tomorrow, the Oklahoma City Barons. Joining us now on the line is Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun. Terry, how are you?
I'm terrific. Yourself?
You've been very busy. You know, you're adjusting well to this new media. You tweet all the time. You're a star there. You have Jones at Large video items up over at the Sun all the time. Who said you can't teach an old dog new tricks?
Oof. Yeah, it's the tweet thing has surprised me. I'll have to. I was like, what is this idiotic pursuit when I took it on as a. I did it during the World Junior in Saskatoon briefly, and or throughout that competition, the Olympics in Vancouver. But I, resigned immediately after both events. But they asked me to do it during the Grey Cup, and with a whole different philosophy than the one they threw at me the first time, which was like to say who scored or whatever. I kind of took the approach that okay, I'm going to do this like I'm sitting. Talking to the guy in the press box beside me, or maybe better said, on the bar stool beside me. And I'm having fun with it, and that's just shocked the heck out of me.
Well, you're very topical, and you have an opinion, and I think that's why you're so popular, and you're killing the local media as far as followers, so good for you. You wrote an excellent article on, I believe it was Thursday, with regard to the arena and Daryl Cates and the ownership and the negotiations. I thought it was critical of both sides, but it was well done. What's the reaction been since Thursday to that article?
Well, the thing that has got me consistently throughout this entire conversation and debate is, and it's, you know, it's the way the world is, but is just how much of the negative anti-Cates, anti-giving billionaire millions sort of, you know, that sort of thing. But the silent majority is a massive majority in this thing. And I think it's hit everybody this week, and I touched on it in the column to some extent, but I think it's far bigger of an impact than I went into, is that this week, $340 million got approved for a museum. And it'll be very near to the, you know, proposed arena site and to the $88 million Alberta Art Gallery. And there's also the matter of, you know, that $112 million for improvements to Commonwealth Stadium, plus another 12 to come to put in the new seats. All of this stuff has gone through, no problem whatsoever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's this arena thing, which we need far worse than anything else there, especially from the component of doing our downtown. And I don't think the problem here is if you could take all of Edmonton and take them to all the rinks around the league, they'd get it without a second of doubt that this is indeed the second oldest rink in the league and way off what is now the standard. They'd also get it if you took them to some downtowns where, you know, you've got that blight downtown, which we have been headed in that direction for a long time. If people aren't living there and there isn't, you know, a real focus in life and walking the streets aspect to it, both day and night, you got a problem. I agree with the mayor. This is far more about that than it is about the arena. But it's also just that whole concept that that Edmonton wants to. The average guy in Edmonton, I don't think, has a problem with the whole concept, just because the you have a chance to have a city to be proud of downtown and a place to go and enjoy yourself in winter and summer, and a building that will be, you know, hopefully the right up there with the top of the best buildings in the league. And that's the part, the reaction to that part is the part that surprised me more than the, you know, the tough stand that I continue to take with Daryl.
I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I continue to be frustrated by, is that it's framed often when I talk to people as a black and white issue, basically a matter of a bully owner versus an inept and short-sighted council. It's a long way from that, right? It's more complicated than that.
I'm sorry?
It's more complicated than that.
No, way more complicated, but it is that. You know, it's hard to get past that is the problem, but getting past that is where the real story is and where the real, you know, I can just imagine this city 4 years, you know, in 2014, when, and I say when, not if, this building is built. The excitement and the pride and what it does for so many things, including just, you know, the mindset of a city that likes itself. The economy is generally better. It's just like when you have winning teams. I think you can find a lot of connections to good things that happen because of that have absolutely nothing to do with that. It's just the way people think. It's all part of that thing, and Edmonton's lost a lot of that in the last few years.
The last question on this, and then we're going to move on to another subject, but I wanted your input in as it's being discussed now. Is this going to be, as you just described, a nice, high-end, international quality, top-drawer arena, or are we going on the cheap a little bit based on what's been proposed?
Well, you can do it right for $450 million, as long as... you know, it's a well-spent $450 million. There are some rinks in this league that I think kind of cut some corners, and St. Louis would be one of them. Boston would be another. New rinks I'm talking about. So there is that concern. I'm always concerned that they're going to forget the press box in a place, because it's amazing how many architects have managed to do that over the years. But $450 million well spent, and especially if the owner is inspired, you know, after the original rink is put into place, to do some things that I suspect might get done here, like creating a Hall of Fame to put in the place, those sort of things. You know, there's a lot of upside there, and there's a ton of money to be made in that building.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll talk about that as time goes on. But I wanted to change subjects a little bit. You wrote another article recently about Paul Lauria and his retirement from anthem singing. I was a little worried maybe that story would get a little lost in the Rod Phillips goodbye. But I thought it was a terrific night last night. What was your feedback on that?
Yeah, I thought the best part of it, you know, Paul is... He did it in a column I wrote the day before today, talking about how, you know, he was definitely going to hold the mic to the crowd and that sort of thing. And I thought the best part of it was, you know, there's a whole bunch of young players on this hockey team that really, really got a feel of, you know, it was only a minute long or whatever, but what it can be like around here, you know, with the playoff thing, because they were, you know, they were 14, 15 years old, and, you know, Taylor Hall, I talked to last night, he happened to watch that game and on television as a kid, and it gives you an idea of what this city is like, or can be like, or has been like, and I think that's really important right now. But it was also just a wonderful payoff for 30 years, you know, I keep talking here and there with people as you go around town, so, well, he's just an anthem singer, right? Well, there are a lot of people around sport who are just an anthem singer, but Paul Lauria, in this situation in Edmonton, was more than an anthem singer, and he got paid off for that last night, and I think that's terrific.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really well handled as well. Terry, have you watched the Oil Change series?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I missed one episode, but... it's somewhere out there online. I intend to catch up to it. The last one, I haven't seen it.
My question is, when Steve Tambellini took over as general manager, and I know it's impossible and we really shouldn't read too much into an episode of a TV show, I really felt that he would be the general manager de facto and that Kevin Lowe would be someone that he checked things with. How do you think that relationship works? Is Tambellini the GM with Lowe signing off on the big items, or has much changed since maybe 2007 in terms of how the management works?
I think that if you wanted to put a percentage on it, that Tambellini is effectively 80% the general manager. He definitely does all the day-to-day general manager things, and he has a boss, and I don't have a problem with that. A lot of people have a problem with Kevin Lowe and the hockey team getting into this situation. A lot of people forget that he has a boss, and that boss wanted is Darryl Cates, who wanted to come in and spend at the cap and buy a team right off the go. And Kevin also has I guess you'd call it an anger management problem, and that showed itself in a couple of deals, Ryan Smith being the most notable. But also, people have already managed to forget 2006 and what he did putting that team together that got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, which was one hell of a job of general managing.
Right.
Put it all together, and with somebody like Tambellini in place that I think has done a pretty good job. Other than on the trade deadlines,
mm-hmm.
I, and but you take that anger management problem of Lowe out of the way, and the situation of blowing this team up has taken the owner out of the way, and I think it just might work with the combination it's in right now. And the difference between this year and last year, and the last night last year, and the last night at home, is phenomenal. I mean, team that finished 30th for the second year in a row, getting a standing ovation at the end of a loss in the last game after giving that crowd 13 wins all season at home, is just remarkable. And it shows that the people have really bought into this rebuild. And you have to understand that most people in Canada, in hockey, said you can't do that in Canada. You can do it somewhere else, but you cannot do it in Canada. Well, they're doing it.
Yep. And I agree with you totally. I think a lot of people miss the point that Darryl Cates was the one who mentioned rebuild first, apparently. And that was only maybe a year ago that they said, okay, maybe we tear this thing down and start
all
over.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, because the idea that anybody, any of those three guys, the owner, the general manager, the hockey president, sat down and decided, this is what we're going to do, is totally fictitious. Mm-hmm. What happened was is they had no blooming choice. I mean, blow it up, it blew itself up to pursue it and continue this and decide not to continue the pre-agent thing and everything. That's the decision that was made. But the blowing it up part it imploded.
With that in mind, what's a reasonable timeline? Obviously, the draft is the big part of this year. Possibly a free agent signing of a mid-level defenseman to replace Jim Vandermeer, or maybe Vandermeer comes back. What's a reasonable timeline, in your opinion, for the Oilers to be in contention for a playoffs? Is that 2 years away?
I'll go with the quote that Tom Rennie said at the start of, before he coached his first game. He told me that we will compete in by our third year, and by competing he meant with the top clubs in the league, and we will win the Stanley Cup by the fifth year.
Okay,
that's what he said. I said, what about the first 2 years? He said, we will compete. I can't really see this team making the big jump to a playoff position next year. But, and we all lose sight of the injuries here in both of these last 2 years. I'm not sure they were a legitimate 30th place team on paper both of those years. But there's a lot of growing to be done here, and there's a lot more changes to be done. And I suspect that there's a good chance that whoever they pick first this year may not start the season with this team.
Right.
Depending whether they pick first or second, and if it's first and they pick Larson, whether he decides to spend another year in Sweden hasn't been mentioned much, but that tends to be the case with a lot of Swedes.
Do you really, I saw your item online, and it looked like you were pretty certain Larson is one and Nugent Hopkins is two. How close do you think that is right now, and is there a possibility that Nugent Hopkins takes over by draft day?
Well, I think if you went to, I must point out that I don't have the inside of the cranium of Stu McGregor on this thing. But, you do it by talking to other scouts, and they're just, hockey's an interesting world in terms of that buzz that goes around and the knowledge that people get from so many sources. It seems to be pretty accurate in most cases. But I suspect that 3 weeks to a month ago, it was Larson, followed by Landeskog, followed by Nugent Hopkins, and with the Couturier out of Quebec in fourth. I suspect that after the first round of the playoffs, that it was Larson with Nugent Hopkins moving up to second, Landeskog slipping down to third, and I really got to have the feeling that from everything I've heard that the Couturier is dropping like a rock.
Okay.
But I think that everybody was looking at this situation with that if Nugent Hopkins continues this in the playoffs, that there is a possibility that he could move up. Larson is, I think they go again tonight, but it's 1-1 in the final. His team got to the final, and remember, he's the youngest guy in the team.
Yeah, and he's playing big minutes, too. So.
Yeah, and he's also a plus player and all that sort of stuff, right?
So three quick ones to end this. Who would you pick if you had a choice for the Oilers Rookie of the Year? And I know that's a loaded question. Two really good candidates and three or four that are really good. So who would you pick, though?
Well, I'd pick Taylor Hall if you're just talking about, if you ignore the number of games played and all that sort of thing. I think he's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to go into... the total number of games played and all that sort of thing, I guess I'd have to go with Jordan Eberle.
Right. And then, really quickly, who wins the Masters this weekend?
I'm going to really cop out on this, but I'll just say it's going to be a European.
Okay. I think that Rory kid is going to win it, but I'm not...
I'm actually looking forward to watching some of it because I haven't seen one swing of a golf club yet.
No, you wouldn't around here. And finally, I have to ask you this, and this is very obscure, and I apologize if it puts you on the spot, but years and years ago when you were working with Whitey on CFRN, do you remember the trivia question about Cy Young? And
we laughed for about 40 minutes on that thing. We got going, and we neither of us could stop laughing.
I remember.
Had more fun doing that show than just about anything I've done in this business. Whitey was so great to work with.
Yeah, it was a great show.
And that studio, which I suspect you may be sitting in right now, was a great place to work. And the guys around there and the operators and, there was just a really good atmosphere around that place. I really enjoyed it. Had a ton of fun. Only problem was nobody listened to it.
To this day, when I hear Ginger Beaumont, and I don't often, I think of you. So.
Before since.
Hey, Terry, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. That's Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, a great columnist for a long, long time, and a guy who doesn't back away from the tough questions, as you heard there. And we really appreciate having him on, talking about the arena, about the Oilers, about the... the management and how it works, and a little bit of insight into the team as well, and talked a little about Paul Laurio as well, and that was a great event last night. 12:21 coming up, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And we are live this afternoon downtown at The Pint, 109th Street and Jasper. You can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. Welcome from the Globe and Mail today, James Myrtle. James, how are you, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What's the weather like in the Big Smoke?
It's been cold here. I mean, maybe I shouldn't complain. I don't know what it's like in Edmonton, but it hasn't been that much above freezing for April so far, which isn't very good.
Oh, it's about sunny and about 19 here, so we got you beat a little. I'm lying.
Well, you know what? I'm from Kamloops. I grew up in Kamloops, so my parents are there, and I get updates from them. And it is sunny and 19 there some days in April, so I'm jealous of them.
Well, it's sunny right now, and it's going to be 14 sometime. This weekend, I can't remember whether it's today or tomorrow. So we're enjoying ourselves, but we've had a long, bloody winter, let me tell you. I'm looking across the street right now, and there's a bunch of snow. Hey, let's get to the subject at hand. One of the things I like about talking to you about Toronto is you most of the times when I'm talking to Leaf fan, I got to divide things in half, but you give me the straight information. And I think James Reimer is a guy who Toronto fans should legitimately be excited about. That guy has really taken off.
Yeah, no, I think they definitely should be excited. But, I think probably the way to approach James Reimer is to be cautiously optimistic and hope that he can keep up this great run. I mean, he's got a great attitude. He works his tail off. He's got a lot of talent. And, I think the reason to be cautious is just because you look at the young goaltenders that have had a great season and then sort of tailed off, like Steve Mason. And, I think what the Leafs need to do is just not put all their eggs in the one basket here and not say, okay, Reimer's our number one. He's going to start 65 games next year. I think they should give him some support in case he does start slow or does run into, some hurdles there next season. But yeah, I mean, he's played exceptionally well.
Is there any possibility, and I'm asking this because we're sort of looking at Dubnyk as maybe a possible invite, has anybody mentioned Canada World Hockey Championships in regard to Reimer?
Yes, I think that's going to happen for sure.
Okay.
You know, it hasn't been confirmed, but, you know, it's something I remember first writing about maybe a month ago. Basically, when Brian Burke didn't put Reimer on the list of players who were going to play in the AHL playoffs for the Toronto Marlies, it sort of, you know, it went off in my head a little bit as sort of a sign that they had other plans for him. And I think the other plans were for him to go play for Canada at the Worlds. He hasn't heard anything about that yet, but from what I'm told, it's going to happen.
You tweeted this week an astounding stat. Tyler Bozak, at the time, had more time on ice than the Sedins. That's an incredible item, number one. And number two, that's got to be the biggest need for the Leafs this summer, a number one center.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you watch the game tonight, they're debuting a 21-year-old named Joe Colburn, who they got for Thomas Kavrla as the number one center. He's going to be playing with Phil Kessel tonight. So I think, you know, in the piece I wrote for the Globe today, I sort of said, this shows how big the need for a center is in Toronto, that they're putting this 21-year-old kid in there for his first NHL game. You know, I think Burke's going to have to look long and hard at getting some kind of a veteran to come in and play with Kessel, because for at least the first half of this season, the Leafs just couldn't score a goal.
Is Richard still there? If he becomes a free agent, would he be their number one option?
I don't think so. No, I don't think there's a great fit there. His age doesn't really fit in sort of the wheelhouse for what the Leafs are building. He's going to want a long-term deal, a big money deal. I don't think the Leafs are that interested in it. There could be a fit if, you know, basically Richard's top three choices are to stay in Dallas, to go back to Tampa Bay, or to go play for the Rangers for his former coach in John Tortorella. That's what he's looking at. And if he can get a deal that's, you know, 7 years, $7 million a year with one of those teams, I think that's definitely where he's going to go. If that doesn't work out, then maybe Toronto comes into the picture as one of his, you know, his backup choices. But I think it's sort of a long shot for Richards to come to Toronto.
So then Colburn, who by the way, played for Camrose in the AJHL before going to U Denver, does he have a shot at making the team next year with Grabowski and all of those other guys in the mix?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, it's really going to depend on if they bring in a center. I think Burke's going to try and bring in someone with a little bit more experience than that, just because of what happened with Bozak this year, where he really struggled in that role. The Leafs are really, really weak at center. So, you know, maybe there's a chance for Colburn to play some of the season with the team. It depends, you know, I think on how well he does in training camp, really. I mean, there's going to be a battle there between Bozak and Kadri and Colburn. And, you know, and there's a spot probably as a third line center there for one of those guys. So we'll see what kind of an offseason they have and what kind of a training camp they have.
Moving over to the wing, Joffrey Lupul has played well as a Leaf.
Yeah, he has. You know, and I talked to a lot of people in Edmonton who said, you know, basically that he's a bum and he's not going to bring very much to the table.
That's because they traded him for Pronger, just so you know.
Yeah. Joffrey's a great guy. I mean, I really like talking to him. He's a very friendly person. He's fit in really, really well with the team. And he's played really well. You know, I think he really wants to prove a lot of people wrong. You know, people in Anaheim that basically gave up on him after he, you know, he worked very, very hard to come back from an injury. He missed a year of hockey. He was bedridden. He lost about 35 pounds. And you can tell, I mean, he's in great physical shape. He's really battled very hard to come back. And he seems determined to sort of become a better player than he has been to date. And we'll see. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of a season he has next year when he does have an off season where he can train and get ready and hopefully be healthy. You know, I think that the back issues, no one really talks about them. I think they still give him a little bit of trouble, and there's a little bit of concern there whether or not he can play a full season, but he's played really, really well so far.
Yeah, he had a tough time here, and I think a lot of it was due to the fact that, you know, who he was traded for, and he did struggle, and he maybe wasn't the perfect winger on a Craig McTavish team, but it was very obvious even before the Oilers had traded for him that he had goal-scoring skill, which is extremely valuable. So I know a lot of us are hoping that he turns it around, and it's good to see him doing well in Toronto. What's your opinion? I've heard varying degrees of anger, and then finally, you know, the NHL's finally doing something about it. What's your opinion of the Rafi Torres four-game suspension?
it does seem a little bit high to me. You know, it's the climate right now for hits like that is really, really interesting, where they're trying to crack down on them as much as possible. And the situation, you know, with the Oilers player was down a little bit, and Torres, I don't think, was trying to hit him in the head and then did. I mean, that's going to be one of the tough things for the NHL here, is that there's contact with the head in hockey all the time. And I think they need to decide, you know, what exactly they're going to do and what kind of suspensions they're going to levy. I haven't, to be honest, I've been following the Leafs. I haven't heard a lot of the discussion out of Edmonton on how they felt about it, but, you know, it's going to be interesting if they want to penalize every hit that severely, because to me, 2 games in the regular season, 2 games in the playoffs, I mean, that's equivalent of, what, 6 or 7 games in the regular season?
Yeah.
That's a big suspension.
To me, that the actual hit that occurred on Jordan Eberle, this is the only time I can recall in NHL history where that would be a 4-game suspension because of the sensitivity. So I think it's a message thing. That's what I think. But I bad luck to Rafi Torres for having, you know, made that hit at the exact wrong time in NHL history, and it cost him.
Yeah, I think in general it's a good thing that they're penalizing the sort of elbow contact to the head, which, you know, they've really been looking out for the past couple months. But, you know, it's going to make for a lot of tough calls for the hockey operations department.
You've been in Toronto following the Leafs all year. I know you've probably followed the Oilers a little bit. What's your opinion of their rebuild? How do you see it going, and how do you see progress happening in Edmonton from where you are?
You know, when they came through Toronto in December, they looked great. I mean, they kicked butt over the Leafs, and it was a real low point for Toronto, I think, in Brian Burke's tenure, was when the Oilers came in, and their rebuild looked so much better than the Leafs at that point. But it's been a real struggle. You know, I really like Devan Dubnyk. I think he's going to be a solid goaltender. You know, he's a guy I actually saw play quite a bit of his junior career in Kamloops, you know, I think he's got the tools to be an NHL goalie, and I'm really glad to see that he's done so well at Edmonton. So there's one foundation piece that I don't think a lot of people talk about Dubnyk, but, you know, you combine that with some of the forwards they've got. They've got another great pick that they're going to find out if it's first or second overall here next week. You know, I think that it's going to be really, really interesting what they do and how that core comes together. There have been a lot of teams that have gotten young and gotten really, really good and won the Stanley Cup, like the Penguins and the Blackhawks. But there have been even more teams that have gone really, really young like that and that haven't really turned into much of anything. You know, if you think of the St. Louis Blues or the Colorado Avalanche or the Florida Panthers, I mean, there's a lot of teams that haven't been able to turn that into anything. So that's going to be the real challenge for Edmonton to do that.
And I think the key question for Oiler fans now, and it's one that I haven't really gotten a good answer on, and I don't know if there is one, is how long, if you devote yourself and say, okay, I'm on board with the rebuild, how long does a good rebuild take, and how long before you realize that this is, you know, not going to work out? I mean, you have to be patient, but at what point do you start questioning, you know, the rebuild and say, hey, maybe we should send in some free agents here and improve this team that way?
Exactly, yeah. And that's the question in Toronto, too, with the Leafs. I mean, it's, you know, before they had this surge, it was, you know, how long is this going to actually take? Because Brian Burke's been here 3 years now. Ron Wilson has been here 3 years. And they've yet to make the playoffs. So, you know, I think that here in Toronto, they're looking for signs of progress from the Leafs next season. I think they're thinking this should be a playoff team in a weak Eastern Conference, or else, you know, we've been a little bit too patient with them if they're not making the playoffs by that point. With the Oilers, you know, they haven't started to show that progress in the standings yet. I mean, they're last place again, so I think next year probably people are going to be looking for the team to at least be a little bit more competitive than it was this year. You know, you're right. At some point, they got to start moving in the other direction.
Well, and I think that you know, next year we'll see a lot of, I think the fans will be less patient, but we'll see. It's there's an incredible degree of goodwill Oilers fans have towards this team, and it was shown last night with a standing ovation after a loss in the final home game. Let's switch gears and go to Ottawa now. Brian Murray, 3-year contract. Did that shock you or stun you?
Well, just knowing the relationship between the owner and Brian Murray, you know, nothing with those two would really shock me anymore. I mean, he's a GM with many lives at this point, you know. And I think if you look back to Brian Murray's tenure in Anaheim, he did a really good job there. And put a lot of the foundation in place. I mean, a lot of people now are talking about Corey Perry as being the Hart Trophy winner, and there's a guy that that Brian Murray drafted in Anaheim, and he also drafted Ryan Getzlaf in that great 2003 draft. So, you know, I don't think Brian Murray's an idiot, but it's another situation where the team was awful this year, and they're talking about going to a full-scale rebuild. And you have to wonder if the guy that put you into that situation where the team was so bad that you wanted to go into that rebuild is the guy you want to take them out. And I think there's parallels there with what happened in Edmonton.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if we go back to when Muckler, I mean, they went to the finals. That was a hell of a hockey club that they had. And, I mean, some of that circumstances, the Heatley and all that stuff. But I was surprised by the three-year tenure there because Brian Murray isn't a young man. I imagine that they'll have to bring in the Kenny Holland item for somewhere in Ottawa over the next couple of years to have someone to follow Brian Murray as general manager, because this is very likely his last gig, right?
Yeah, no, I would think so, yeah. And there was a lot of talk that he wasn't going to come back because of his personal choices, that he didn't want to come back and that he was, you know, willing to step into more of a subordinate role or something like that. So something Melnick must have said must have convinced him to stay on and see this process through. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can sort of reestablish his reputation as a guy who can build a top team.
If they're going full bore rebuild, is Spezza then in play during the summertime?
That contract is going to be awfully difficult to move. You know, yeah. I think that's one of those contracts that's going to be really tough. I mean, if your team is trying to rebuild and you want to move him out, you probably want to bring back some young pieces. But I don't know if you can get those with a guy with a contract like that. I mean, it reminds me sort of the Scott Gomez situation a little bit. And, kudos to the Rangers for getting a good young player out of that situation, because Gomez has not worked out in Montreal. And, you know, I think with Spezza, you know, they were saying it during the game on Thursday night that essentially, you know, he's a guy that can score two goals and be minus two in the game. And I just don't know what kind of value he's going to have on the market.
No. One final question for you, James. Who wins the Masters tomorrow?
I have no idea. I'm afraid I haven't been watching it. How's Tiger doing?
He had a hell of a run yesterday. He did very well. I think he was minus seven and the leader's minus 10. So, yeah, pick Tiger. You could be right. There's no prize for this.
I'd like to watch more of it, but it's, you know, this time of year is just, you know, yesterday was one of the busiest days I've had of the year. I'm just trying to wrap everything up, and then we're going to be doing playoff coverage starting on Monday and Tuesday. So it's, I'll be on a plane or in a car going off to a playoff game. So, you know, don't really have a lot of time to watch the golf, unfortunately.
James, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. Interesting conversation there about the Leafs and the Oilers and Brian Murray getting a three-year deal. It's 12:41, and coming up, we're going to talk to Bob Ridley, Medicine Hat Tigers play-by-play man.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at The Pint, 109th and Jasper, until 2 o'clock today. It's 12:45. You can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. Have a few emails to get to here. This is from Michael Clark saying, got to say the case for Timo Hartikainen keeps growing. I think he starts next season in the NHL. Found some chemistry with Omark and Pajarvi. Would you go out this summer and offer Glenn Cross a contract? He would compliment Jones, throw in Cogliano in the middle, and that would make a good fourth line for 50 to 65 games of the year. Interesting. I think the Oilers, for right now, for the summertime, have to figure out what they're going to do at center. They got Horkoff, Gagne, Cogliano, Colin Fraser. That's the healthy top four. You've got Vandevelde, who's shown well. You've got Anton Lander, who is likely to be signed and come over from Sweden. So there's a few players in the mix inside the organization that might, or obviously will play top 4 minutes. And then you've got somebody like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who could be drafted, might have to move Gagne or Cogliano off the top, off the center position. So move them onto the wing. There's a lot of things to happen before July 1st comes. So as far as signing a Glenn Cross is concerned, I think it's an either-or. Either Ryan Jones, who looks like, from what we've read in the papers the last couple of days, looks like he's negotiating and may well be very close to a deal. So that may mean someone like Glenn Cross doesn't come over. Of course, the great thing about Glenn Cross is he really does have more grit than most of the Oilers wingers do. I guess Hartikainen is a guy that we're looking to fill that role, but it might be a year or so before he gets off the fourth line. So interesting questions and something that we can look at as we move forward. This is from Jason, and he says, what do you think of the blue line going into 2011-12? That's an interesting question, too. I look at the Oilers right now as a team that has two top four defensemen, and that's Whitney and Gilbert. When healthy, those guys can play in the top four. Gilbert might not be able to be that top pairing guy without Whitney. Whitney probably the best complete defenseman on the team. Then there's a few candidates for the third pairing, and I'd count Petrie, Smead, and Peckham there. Someday, one or two of those guys may be able to reach into the top four and play big minutes on the PK or the power play. But as of right now, you'd like them to be your secondary guys. So there's two openings there, and I suspect the Oilers will sign a Jim Vandermeer or a Jim Vandermeer type sometime during this summer, and he will likely be one of the candidates for the top four. They might put Petrie in there with Vandermeer or Smead in with Petrie, something like that. But you're going to be a little weak in your top four, and that's before injuries. And the one thing the Edmonton Oilers have taught us over the last 3 years is that there's always injuries, especially to defensemen. They are just a very tough position to play. So my feeling is that we as Oilers fans should look forward to one free agent signing, maybe a deal or two, but the top six defensemen next year are very likely to be Whitney, Gilbert, Petrie, Smead, Peckham, Foster, and maybe a free agent of Vandermeer type who's going to be coming in. That's what I look at. There's no real hurry for them to go out and sign or trade for, unless he's readily available, a big stud on the blue line, and they might be drafting one in Adam Larson, and he's to be considered too when we look at it. 12:49 now. I'm delighted to welcome and talk to Bob Ridley. Bob, how are you?
Really good. Yourself?
I'm good. Now, you must be a little hoarse after last night's game. That was a wicked one for the Tigers.
Well, there was lots of goals scored, no doubt about it. Rather surprising. Like, we expected this series to be low scoring and a lot of defense, but Red Deer Rebels got off the game a little bit, and as a result, Tigers wound up on the power play, and yeah, you're right. There was lots of goals. A lot of fun in that one for the Tigers, anyway.
Tyler Bunn's back in the game. Was it a busy night for him?
Well, he was solid. Let's put it that way. He hadn't played for maybe 10 days or so, but he was solid, made the saves that he had to make, and wasn't tested a whole lot, which was a good thing. A lot of the action was at the other end of the ice. Like I said, Red Deer just wasn't quite there with their game, and the Tigers were on top of there. But Tyler looked real good, and looks as though he's responded very, very well from that head injury that he had.
The big scoring stars for the Tigers last night and during the regular year, Lyndon Vay and Emerson Edom, they seemed like they were having some big-time success last night.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, to win in the playoffs, as you well know, your best players got to be your best players, as the old cliche goes. And that was the case there last night for the Red Deer Rebels. They didn't get that. And we're expecting, you know, that to kind of turn around a little bit here tonight. We know that Andre Cardona, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, John Pearson, and Ferguson and Elsom, they're all very, very capable, and they can wind it up offensively as well. So I think you'll see the Red Deer Rebels scoring a few more goals than they did last night. And as far as the Tigers are concerned, I know Emerson Edom, Lennon Vay have been doing a lot of their scoring, but they've also been getting some real good secondary scoring as well, which you have to have in the playoffs. Jace Coyle coming off the backhand had a couple of goals there last night, and Thomas Carlson scoring on a power play. So it's important that everybody chips in at this time of the year, as you know.
Tyler Pitlick had a good regular season, was injured. Is he possible to come back if the Tigers go deep enough in the playoffs, or is he out for the entire year?
No, he's not out for the entire year. He's working hard at rehabbing, and if the Tigers should have to get through this series against the Red Deer Rebels, we'll probably see him back in the lineup for the next series, the conference finals. So he's just itching to get back in again, and doing a real good job in rehabbing. He's with the club as we speak, and their biggest cheerleader right now. But Tyler Pitlick's a great kid, and then all the people in Edmonton are really going to enjoy him as time moves forward here when he graduates.
He's a gritty, more gritty player, is he, on the right wing?
He is a power forward, no question about it. He's got good strength and good balance. He likes to get in the dirty areas in front of the net, and comes off that wing so strong, he's very tough for a defenseman to kind of contain him. So Tyler Pitlick's got pro written all over him, no question about it.
Did he play at all at center, or did they have him at the wing the entire year?
Mostly at the wing. On occasion, he would take the odd center shift, but for the most part, he was played on the wing, and they did a great job there coming off the wing as well.
Bob, I'm going to change gears a little bit here because you are a legend in Medicine Hat and in the WHL, so I want to set a few facts straight for our listeners. You started doing play-by-play and doing the bus driving and all kinds of things for the Tigers in 1970, correct?
Yeah, that's when we came into the league. I was very fortunate to happen to be in Medicine at the time. We were broadcasting senior hockey at that time, and then the old arena burnt down, and they switched gears into major junior, got into the Western Hockey League, and we've been doing this ever since. And I'll tell you one thing, it's been a heck of a ride, no pun intended.
You've seen everybody from Stan Weir to the current group. Who's the best Tiger you ever saw?
You know, the people keep putting me on the spot that way, and there's been so many good ones, and they all contributed in a different way. But probably, and I'm not saying this to show any favoritism at all, but probably the best Tiger ever as far as all-around play was concerned was Tom Lysiak. He won back-to-back scoring championships back in the early 70s. And Lyndon Bay was the only other player of, the modern era to even come close to that. Lyndon Bay, of course, winning the championship this year for the Tigers. But Tom Lysiak, he was an outstanding junior, could do it all. He was a great skater. He was tough and great stick handler. Could score goals. He was more of a setup man than a goal scorer, however. And I would have to say, when you boil it right down to who is the best ever Tiger, it was Tom Lysiak.
And he had a fine NHL career in Atlanta and Chicago
as
well.
He did, yes, yeah. He did, yeah.
I saw a few WHL games back then, the early to mid-1970s, and they were long and fight-filled. That's what I remember. They just took forever to play. Is the WHL game better now, do you believe?
100% better, no question about it. There's more hockey now. There's more speed, more skill and everything else. Yeah, back then you had your few players in every team that had some good speed and skill. But now all these kids can skate. They can all shoot. They can all grind if they have to. There's no question about it. Hockey in general, I think, is a lot better than it used to be. Yeah, we still like to see the fight and everything else, and I hope that never leaves the game. But back then, of course, it was Pearson sprawled almost every time out. But, the game is a lot better. And anyone that says it's not is crazy because I just love the way the game is right now. The smaller player, the smaller skilled player can now play and be an impact and so on. It's a much better game than it's ever been.
And, the Gasoffs could play today, but they'd play a different style, right? They wouldn't be fighting.
They'd have to learn how to skate a little bit, if you know what I mean. Bob Gassoff, Brad Gassoff. Ken Gassoff was more of a skill player, but Brad and Bob, they were knock him down, drag him out type players. And you beat one and you'd have to go after the other one too. So it was a tough group that we had back then. But, they'd have trouble keeping up now. There's no question.
Bob, I've listened to you on the radio for years when I'm in the hat, and it's a thrill to talk to you on the radio. And I want to wish you the best of luck as you continue calling those Tigers games.
Thank you so much. It's been a ball, and I really appreciate this. And thanks for giving me the time.
All right. Bob Ridley, Medicine Hat Tigers play-by-play man and a real class act. And kind of had an opportunity to talk to him. He's a real legend. I mean, imagine 1970. Most of you probably can't remember 1970, but I can. To have one job and to do it over and over again so well. And the guy is a legend in Medicine Hat for good reason. And throughout the WHL, an award winner, Alberta Sports Hall of Fame, and various other awards from the WHL. And it was a real thrill to talk to him. It's 12:56. We are live at the Pine. Coming up in the next hour, Gene Principe from Rogers Sportsnet. Jim Byers is a regular on the show because Oklahoma City keeps doing something compelling every week. And we'll talk to Jason McKee and congratulate the Spruce Grove Saints as they win the AJHL championship last night. This is Nation Radio live at the Pine. We're back after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are broadcasting live today at The Pine, downtown 109th Street and Jasper Avenue. Invite you by. You can also email us at nationradio@team1260.com. Coming up in this hour, Gene Principe from Rogers Sportsnet. We're going to talk a little bit about the Oilers and possibly some moves they'll make in the summertime. We'll have Jim Byers on from the Oklahoma City Barons, a very busy weekend. One more win and they're in, I believe. We'll get confirmation from Jim later on this hour. And Jason McKee from Spruce Grove Saints, their head coach. Another win, another championship for them in the AJHL, and that happened last night against Camrose. We'll talk about that and more. Some confusion about the Clear Day roster for the Oklahoma City Barons, so I want to pass this along again. Some folks thinking that Liam Reddix is on the list. As far as I know, he's not. This is the Clear Day roster that was approved by the American Hockey League. It goes like this. In goal, Jeff Drouin-Delorier and Martin Gerber. Gerber is healthy again. We'll check with Jim, but I believe he was on the bench last night. On the blue line, Brian Helmer, the veteran who was signed midseason by OKC. Also, Kevin Montgomery, the gentleman who was picked up in a deal for Sean Bell and has looked very good so far. And Richard Petiot. Also, Jeff Petrie on the Oilers now. He can be sent back and optioned out to Oklahoma City. Alex Plante, Jake Taylor, and Colton Tubert. One of the things we'll talk to Jim about is how those defensive pairings will look with Petrie going back down. Up front, Mark Arcobello, Alex Giroux, Timo Hartikainen, Linus Omark, Ryan O'Mara, and Chris Van de Velde will all be sent down or have the option to be sent down. Milan Kitnar, Andrew Lord, Colin McDonald, Brad Moran, Ben Andres, Greg Stewart, and Zach Stortini, in case you'd forgotten about Zach Stortini. He's on the roster. Defenseman Anthony Aiello and forwards Phil Cornett and Matt Marquardt are still available to practice. They can only play in a game with injury, recall, and suspension. Okay, that would have to put Oklahoma City at 17 games or 17 players or fewer. That's the only option that they can play. Some of these AHL kids, not just the ones who've been called up, but some of these kids are really playing well. In the last six games, Milan Kitnar is 5 goals, 3 assists, +5. Arcobello, who was just signed to a contract by the Oilers, 6 games, 3-4-7, +4. Tanner House, who was signed as a free agent after his NCAA career ended, 4 games, 1-3-4, +4. And Philip Cornett, 0-4-4, +3 after the last six games for him. And Montgomery is +9 in the last five. He came over from the Colorado organization and looks very good. And it'll be interesting to see when Petrie goes down exactly what happens as far as the depth chart is concerned. It's going to be an interesting item. Got a few other emails to get to. By the way, you can email us at nationradio@team1260.com. This is coming in from Speeds. He says, I'm wondering about Habby Boulin continuing to make so many starts in spite of his performance as compared to Dubnyk. Speeds, I think that was addressed a little bit in our conversation earlier with regard to the Toronto Maple Leafs and James Reimer. A lot of times with NHL teams, it's a matter of not wanting to put too much pressure on a rookie or a young goaltender, and that's likely what's happened with Reimer and with Dubnyk here, and that's the reason. Despite the fact that their performances are somewhat different, Dubnyk is almost at .500, I believe, in one loss, and his save percentage is better. I think there's a sense of not wanting to put too much pressure on Dubnyk because this is his rookie year, even though he's playing very well. It's 4 minutes after one. We are Nation Radio, live at the Pine on Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. Great deal of pleasure to welcome Gene Principe from Rogers Sportsnet.
Good morning. How are you? Afternoon, I guess.
No problem at all. Now, this is basically the end of a long year for you. Do you hit the links and fly out, or do you hang around for a while?
You know what? I am not a golfer at all. To be honest with you, I get the attraction, but I just have never had it myself. For example, I didn't golf once last summer, and usually I would golf once a year with my buddies, but as we would joke, you'd pay $40 or $50 just to go for a walk in the park. So I'm not a golfer at all. I just like to, you know, enjoy family time, of course, after a busy year. And I play soccer, and just enjoy the outdoors. I do like being outside a lot in the summer, but not when it comes to golf.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, indoors all the time, and you're working late nights and all that kind of stuff. It's probably really important to get family time in the summertime.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I. There's times in the winter where you kind of go, not why am I doing this? I'm doing it because I do love it, but it gets long and drawn out at times. But then when you get the off season where it's a lot quieter and you have a lot more time to do what I want to do, which is spend time with my family and enjoy a few other things, then, all kind of, it's about balance in life, right? So yep. Sometimes it teeter-totters one way too much, and then you're able to kind of even it back out.
To the business at hand of the NHL season, if you had a vote for Oilers Rookie of the Year, and maybe you do, who would you choose?
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to go Taylor Hall. Yeah, I just think that, if he had been able to play, I think he finished at 65 games, so that's 17 more games. I'm thinking, he was starting to, people will look at 42 points in 65 games, and of course they do the math and they average it out, but you have to look at how he was like a river, right? He was cresting, and he was going up, and he was going up. So I'll tell you what, I wouldn't have been surprised if he finished with, well, certainly in the 50s for points, and I wouldn't have been totally shocked to have him hit 30 goals. I just think that he was playing so well. And the other thing, too, is, you can count on one hand, maybe two, how many guys either get you to the edge of your seat or get you out of it. And he's, in my books, one of them. And so he'd have to be my Rookie of the Year, even though Jordan never really has been really good. He's a less... Well, I was going to say less dynamic, but if you saw his first NHL goal, you might be disagreeing with me on that. But generally speaking, he's not as dynamic as Taylor. Doesn't mean he can't be as effective, or maybe more effective at times, but just different kinds of players. So I guess Taylor would get my vote.
Yeah, I'd agree with Hall in that the team has never been more dangerous than when he was in the lineup, and I think when he went out of the lineup, they've been a little easier to play against for other teams, because Hall, he didn't take long to become a very dangerous player on the ice.
You know, the other thing, too, is did he make guys around him better? And I think Taylor did that. He's got that quality kind of like Hemsky, is that he can make people better around him. And that's one of the things I look at. He was traded at the deadline, and I like Dustin Penner. But when you look at that particular character trait, I don't think Dustin was big on that. Like, I just don't think Dustin made a lot of the guys around him better. Mm-hmm. He is a good player. He would score 30 goals on a team that, finishes 30th in the NHL. But I just don't know if he could get guys out of slumps, I guess. And I think Taylor Hall and Alex Hemsky in particular on Edmonton are guys that can pull other guys with them. And if they're in a slump, that's the guy you want to put them with.
One of the quotes that I think got lost, or at least for me anyway, I was hoping that would be extrapolated a little more as time went on, was when Rennie talked about Taylor Hall and the center experiment. At the end of it, he said, this isn't over. I'm assuming now that he meant like for next season. Do you think that's something that the Oilers as an organization will look at over the summertime?
Well, I think that they will, and I think that they have to. They're exploring where he fits best. At this point, I believe he's best on the wing, but only because he's played more of that. I'm not suggesting he can't be. I think with Taylor, I think he's going to be pretty good to really good to great in any of those positions. Now, how are you going to maximize him the most? Is it on wing or center? Right now, I think it's wing, but that doesn't mean it can't be center. And the other thing, too, is who do they draft, right? And who do they sign in the offseason? If they draft Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, for example, he may not be quite ready to come to the NHL, but if they have another young centerman that they draft and they sign another centerman, they may not need him at center. I think if the Oilers had to a top, first line and a second line center that they felt really, really comfortable about, they may not have even tried Taylor at center. But if you're ever going to experiment, it was like the 60s around the Oilers this year. Why not, right? Yep. Start experimenting with stuff just to see what works and how well it works. And, the kid's got a really good hockey IQ, so I think he'll fit in anywhere. But the other thing, too, is if you end up, how would a line of Everly, Hall, and Pierre look? It would look great, but I don't know if that's It depends if Taylor wants to play and if they want him to play center. But I don't think it's over for sure, because I think that he'll get some games at center again next year to see if that's a good fit for him.
Yeah. With all the excitement over the great, I mean, the three rookies up front, plus the call-ups, I mean, Hartikainen's looked great, Omark has looked great. Lost in the shuffle a little bit, and partly due to injury, has been Gilbert Brulé. Where do you see him slotting in for next year?
Don't know. I mean, I don't know. I know that Gilbert Brulé can play in the NHL. I have no doubt about that. You can discuss, argue where he fits, if he's a third line or a second line, or maybe some people think he's a fourth line, or for that matter, a first line. But he needs to get himself straightened out health-wise. I mean, this just has been, for him, it's funny because it's not that he's you know, he hasn't had a season-ending injury like Hemsky had last year, for example, or Ryan Whitney had this year. But in some ways, it feels like the season's been a waste for him, just because it's been in and out and in and out and in and out. And now with a concussion, you know, no answers are clear on that front, if that's what's sort of lingering for him. But he's a young man who just has health problems. And got to get that fixed up, because I think if they fix that up, to me, he would be the kind of guy that could be elevated in your lineup, but you might slot in as a third line guy, because he is pretty gritty when he plays. He's fast and he's got some skill, but if you needed him to move up, he could. But they just got to figure out what's going on with this kid, to see if they can just get him straightened out. He's still just, I think he was an 05 draft, which makes him next year, I mean, he's like 24, 25 years old.
Yeah,
he's still a young man.
Yeah. He reminds me a little bit about his career progression in Edmonton. Reminds me a little bit about what happened with Joffrey Lupul. I don't think anybody questioned that Lupul had talent. It just didn't come out here very well, and it appears to me Brulé might be in the same situation. He may need a change of scenery.
Well, I wonder, you know, and I mean, I think, if I'm just going off memory, but I think he signed a two-year deal going into this past year, and it was 2 years and I think $3.5 million. So at that rate, if you're a team that thinks he can be a second line player, for that matter, a third line player, you know, that's not a bad return if he gets you 20 goals. But I just, it's been a strange year for him. He's a real nice kid. He wants to play. He wants to be good. He wants to compete. He wants to be a contributor to the Oilers. But, you know, you can't do that from a hospital bed or the medical room or from the press box.
No. Let's change positions a little bit. I thought Steve Tamalini did a really nice job last summer bringing in Martin Gerber as insurance in goal. They may have to do something similar this year, because Dubnyk has really established himself and played well. But Nikolai Habibulin, you know, he had some difficulties this year. Do you see them signing or acquiring a goalie as a depth guy who can play in the AHL similar to Gerber for next year?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, I think with Nikolai, from a back standpoint, there were a lot of concerns this year that, you know, would his back hold up? And I think that he's fine now. I mean, it hasn't been a good season for him, but I don't think anyone would point to his back for the reason or biggest reason that it's been like that. I'm a bit torn. I mean, I think if there's someone available, for sure. I mean, Gerber was a great insurance policy, and I know a lot of people wondered why he wasn't playing, but you have to do some math, and whether that be the math of contracts or the math of ages, that's why he wasn't up here for more than the three games that he won. You know, the other thing is, if you're Jeff Delorier, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, I think I'm going to try somewhere else, or do you think, well, maybe if I have a really good year in the minors, and Nikolai Habibulin after that is only 1 year left, you know, I got more of a shot. I don't know that they're as desperate for depth in net, only because Nick has proven that his back is okay, you know, knock on wood, unless something unforeseen occurs, where that was a big question mark. And obviously last year there was a lot of talk about his, you know, his situation off the ice, and there was uncertainty regarding that. But I believe, and I'm certainly not a criminal lawyer, but if and or when he ends up going, to prison or to wherever he needs to go, it would be done in the off season. So that's not a concern that he would be pulled out of the lineup during the year. So would they look for someone? I don't think they're not looking for someone, but I don't think they need it as much as they needed it going into this past year.
On the blue line, Curtis Foster was a disappointment, but he's got another year, and often with free agents, it takes a year to adjust. And obviously, he had some issues that were outside the rink that we, you know, have to, you know, allow for. Do you think the Oilers along the blue line may bring back a Jim Vandermeer or someone similar because of the fact that that's such an injury-prone position?
Well, yeah, I think they're open to bringing Jim Vandermeer back. Probably not at 2.3 million, but you know, if you look at this team, you'd have to think that Whitney Gilbert Petrie would be three of your blue liners, you know, barring a trade, but there's three. You probably are thinking that Schmid and Peckham are part of it, so that's your up to 4 or 5, which leaves you, you know, Jason Strudwick. Hard to say whether you know, he's as well loved the guys you'll find in that dressing room, but it depends on who else is sort of on their way up. Taylor Chorney, does he fit? No, I do think that they could use probably like a, well, I mean, it'd be great to get a top two defenseman, but I think if they could get a 3-4 guy who could log 20 minutes and kind of fit in with the Whitney Gilbert Petrie combination, I think that would serve them, reasonably speaking, well enough, because this year, certainly after they lost Ryan, it was you know, a difficult time back there. They went through a number of different defensemen. I kind of thought Sean Bell would be a good fit, but you know, obviously that didn't work out. So yes, some depth would be great, but I think if they could get someone who's a 3-4, that would be the best fit for them, because they've got, again, getting a 1-2 is, I'm going to say, nearly impossible. So if you can't get that, then to get someone just sort of below that would help out, because I think they've got Whitney and Petrie potentially up top. They've got Schmid and Peckham sort of, you know, as a third line pairing or somewhere in that mix. It's that middle area I think they need a little bit more.
Right. If you are, do you talk to Stu McGregor a lot? Is he around and you can yak at him a little bit?
You know what? I haven't seen him for a while, but I do, you know, certainly when I see him, we do talk. You want to know about who they're going to draft?
Well, I'd like to break the news here if I could, you know.
Well, I can't break it for you. I hate to say it. I mean, I think right now the sexier option is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, because of the series that he had against the Edmonton Oil Kings, because he's an hour and a half down the road, because he's a Canadian kid, and because he said, I'd like to play for Edmonton. I mean, you're thinking, well, what, you know, do I have to go to door number two when I hear that from door number one? But I think the biggest thing is, in my mind, it's one of those two guys, him or Adam Larson. Landeskog, you know, I can't say that I've seen him a lot or as much or maybe read as much about him. And Couturier, you know, here's the thing. If you could give his height and weight to Nugent Hopkins,
yeah,
then I could guarantee you who'd be first overall.
Right,
I think
exactly.
It'd be pretty easy.
Yeah.
So I don't know how caught up they are in the size thing. I would agree from a standpoint of, you know, when I look at a Perry and a Getzlaff from Anaheim, I mean, I would love to see someone 6'3", 220, play a forward position with skill. Pjarvi's close to that. I mean, he's not quite that big, but he's, you know, he's
big
size
man.
Isn't an issue for him.
Yep.
But after that, you've got Omark, you've got Gagne, you've got, you know, Hall's not small, but he's not big. You got Eberle, you've got a lot of guys who are in that 5'10", 5'11", 6-foot range. So from that standpoint, Couturier would be great, but I just don't know if he's got enough to be a first overall pick. Larson, depends. If he's the next Eric Johnson, no. I don't, you know, you don't want him. But if you think that he can be a franchise type player, which don't come around very often, or at least someone that you think will play in your top four for the next 10 to 15 years, or 10 years, then, you know, maybe give that a go. I mean, the Oilers do have a lot of upfront skill. Can you use more? Always. Do you need more in defense? Yes. The other guy we didn't talk about on defense is Colton Tubert. He's another
right.
guy that would be more of a, I think, a 4-5-6 than a 1-2-3. So, you know, you may see the Oilers, they may have enough toughness on the blue line. They may not need to keep some of the guys I mentioned that provide the toughness. But I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Yep.
But I remember last year covering the draft, and I was back and forth. One week I was Sagan, one week I was Hall. One week I was Hall, one week I was Sagan. Then you meet them and you talk to them and go, wow, I'd take Sagan. Then you take, you know, I mean, I was back and forth, and that's just going on what I've seen, what I've heard, and their personalities. You know, the Oilers have done 100-fold times more checking than I've done into these kids. So it's really difficult to say who will be the number one pick for Edmonton if they win the lottery.
Yeah. Final question, Gene, and this one's a little out there, so bear with me. I worked with Bryn Griffiths for years, and yeah, I know. He would go on the internet and surf pun. So and he would get in a car and drive 600 miles if he had to in any direction for a good pun. So I know you'd get along well with him. My question for you is, you come up with groaner puns and funny puns and lots of puns. Do you get some of those sent to you, or are those all yours?
You know what's happening now? They used to be all mine, because that's just, you know, I would get the odd one sort of thrown at me, right, from people. But now, in the world of Twitter, I get some doozies sent to me. I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, I certainly haven't cornered the market on puns, right? There's lots of people out there that have great creative minds. And so I think, especially for me, I've been on Twitter since the trade deadline two seasons ago, or last season, that more and more now people will say, hey, use this, or how about this one? And of course, some are okay, some aren't very good, kind of like my work, and then some are fantastic. And a lot of times when I get a fantastic one, I email or tweet the guy back or girl back, say, you know what, don't be surprised if I use that, okay? So there are some good ones that are coming my way now. And I mean, the longer you do it, the more help you need in order to keep doing it reasonably well, or reasonably not so well, depending on who the viewer is. So I do get some help nowadays, but I mean, most still come from me, but there's people out there, though, that have some real good ideas on some puns. So I really appreciate the help, especially during a, you know, a tough season and stuff like that. It's always nice to try and have some fun, but not have it kind of, in my mind, at the expense of the players or the team specifically.
Right, lighten the load and not make it such a downer, for sure.
Yeah, just enjoy yourself a bit.
Yeah, Gene, thanks so much for this. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your summer.
Thanks. I appreciate the time.
All right. That's Gene Principe from Rogers Sportsnet, talking puns, talking Oilers, talking summer. And you know what? It's going to be a very interesting summer for Oilers fans. Coming up, we'll talk to Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at The Pint, 109th and Jasper. Come on down. You can also email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Coming up in the next half hour or so, Jason McKee from Spruce Grove Saints, winners of the AJHL Championship last night. Welcome now, Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play man. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's an exciting day here. The team's getting ready in a short while to board a bus to Austin, Texas, to play the Texas Stars, the Barons' next-to-last game of the year, and a point, standing point of any sort here over the next couple of games for the Barons puts them in the playoffs.
How far is Austin from Oklahoma City?
Well, actually, we are in Austin. Oak City is actually the closest team geographically to the Barons, about 375 miles. Now, we played last night and beat San Antonio 7-2, and the team had a good post-game meal last night in the San Antonio Hotel, spent the night here in San Antonio. It's about a 90-minute drive up the interstate to Austin from here, so the team elected to spend the night here in San Antonio and stay in the hotel we've been in for about 3 days. And so that's the bus ride I'm referring to, a little jaunt up the turnpike to Austin, where there's a game coming up tonight.
Are those the closest rivals, Jim?
Yeah, the three Texas teams are all within a reasonable bus ride of 8 hours or less. The Texas Stars are really only about 5.5 or 6 hours away by bus. No direct flights, though, between Austin and Oklahoma City. The cities, while state capitals, aren't quite big enough. Houston and San Antonio are both, give or take, a few miles, about 500 miles away. And with the modern buses we have, that's pretty easy transportation. So we're a bit isolated, but these are teams down here that we tend to play more and that are fairly close to us.
With the 1 point to the playoffs, it's becoming more important to pay attention to things like the clear day roster. Among Oilers currently, Jeff Petrie, Timo Hartikainen, Linus Omark, Ryan O'Mara, and Chris Van Develde are eligible. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct. And we could be getting some of those guys back, not tonight, obviously, but it just remains to be seen once the Oilers season is over. But all of those players you mentioned would be eligible for potential postseason play, assuming the Barons get a win or just at least a standing point tonight or tomorrow.
Got an email here, a question for you, Jim, from Speeds, asking for your opinion as to when if Petrie does get sent down on defense, who might opt out of the lineup, or who might be the healthy scratch among the current top six?
Well, that's a good question. There's going to be some hard decisions that are going to have to be made if, in fact, some of these guys do come down. And lately, Kevin Montgomery, whom the Oilers got from Colorado in the trade deadline deal that sent Sean Bell out of the organization, had kind of been the sort of the odd man out a little bit lately. But Montgomery's played very well of late, had a goal to prove to be the game winner last week in a shutout at home, and has been playing really well on defense, paired last night with Brian Helmer. But I would think that Montgomery might be it, but it's really hard to say. You know, it's hard right now to sit Plante and Tubert. They've been playing very well. Helmer is, you know, the veteran presence back there, and has been a top player in this league for 18 years or so. And so really everyone's been playing pretty well. But, you know, they'd have to find room for him if they send him down. So it's going to be a long, hard decision. But I would say that Montgomery would probably be the guy. But that's strictly speculation on my part.
Is there any, and I don't know the answer to this question, might be a stupid question, but is there any ratio, veteran to non-veteran ratio, that they have to worry about, or they can play anybody on that clear day roster?
The veteran rule holds, as far as I know, all the way through the playoffs, which means you're allowed five players to suit up for a game that have played 320 or more pro games as of the start of the season. And when I say pro, I mean ECHL, the old IHL, American League, National League, and certain European League. Five guys who have played 320 games or more. And then you're allowed one player to dress per game who's played between 260 and 320 games. That's called your exempt veteran. So you can have six vets. Five can have played 1,000 games if necessary, and one has to be between that 260 to 320 mark, and those are obviously games as of the start of the season, so you don't all of a sudden turn into a vet during the year. But of the 18 skaters that you dress for a game, you have to have 12 of them that are under those limits, and you could have five that are the super vets and one that's the exempt vet. And there was a situation earlier this year where we actually had too many vets, and that was part of the reason that prompted the Sean Bell trade, was he was something of an extra vet for a while after Zach Stortini was sent down. But there are no vets on that clear day roster, so they can all come in and just start to playing. It's just going to create some tough decisions in some cases, because this team is playing very well. The Barons have won three in a row. They had a crucial back-to-back set of shutout wins at home last week that put their playoff fate in their own destiny. And, you know, as we've been talking about, there's only one playoff spot now remaining in the Western Conference, and there's four teams going for it. And Oklahoma City can freeze out the other three with a standing point tonight or tomorrow. And there's a potential still for some ties, but the Barons own the tiebreakers over all of the other clubs that are contesting for that last playoff spot.
Jim, is that dizzying AHL veteran rule put in there so that it forces them to play prospects? Is that the reason for it?
Yeah, yeah, and they much prefer that it be called a player development rule rather than a veteran rule. It forces the young players churned in through the league, and it makes clubs make a decision if they want to keep an older guy, who, regardless of who it might be. And this doesn't apply to goaltenders, only to skaters, only forwards and defensemen. But, you know, it does force a churn through the league and prevents a team. You know, in the old IHL, there was no vet rule back when it was the level below the NHL. And Todd Nelson was saying the other day he was on a team with 14 vets on it, I think was the number one time. So it kind of prevents teams from stacking the deck and guarantees that there'll be a prospect influx, as the AHL prides itself on being a development league.
The Barons have relied heavily on that top line. Last night, an example, Colin McDonald with four goals. But it seems as though kids like Kitnar and Tanner House now are coming along.
Yeah, he's been a huge find house. And Hunter Tremblay, who just won a CIS National Championship for the University of New Brunswick, played his first game as a pro last night, and he was quite effective. House had a goal and an assist last night, as you mentioned. Milan Kittner, who played in the Western League after growing up in Slovakia, has played very well down the stretch. He has a six-game point streak working. And he was a guy that was sort of a fourth-line center earlier in the year. And as big as that big line has been, and it was remarkable last night, Alexander Giroux and Brad Moran assisted on all four of Colin McDonald's goals last night, which is a little rare. But as big as that big line has been, when this team has performed well this year, it's had depth. And early in the year, it had depth with Ryan O'Mara between Omark and Reddix. And then, of course, that line has spent much of the year in Edmonton. But now these kid lines with Kittner, and he was paired with a young guy, Philippe Cornet, earlier in the year, and they performed well down the stretch. And now Tanner House has performed really well, fresh out of the University of Maine. So, you know, it's depth that has really helped this team put itself in position to make the playoffs, and then there's still some work to do. They don't really give away standing points in Texas or Houston, where the Barons will be tomorrow, but, you know, it certainly is a little more reassuring to know if you win or at least get a standing point, you're in.
Cornet is a guy who a little disappointing. He is not on the Clear Day roster, but he's played well recently, and if there is an injury, he can go back on the roster, right?
Yes. You never have to skate below 18 skaters. So the Clear Day roster includes the 22 players. So if you have call-ups and injuries or suspensions that would put you at under 18 skaters for a game, you can add players. And with so many players called up lately, we've been able to dress pretty much whoever we've wanted to, replacing the guys that are in Edmonton. So, yeah, that's the way it works. If there's call-ups or injuries that cause you to be, if you lose three guys off your Clear Day roster to various reasons, you can add one. And if from each succeeding guy you might lose to a call-up or a suspension or an injury, you can add another. So you never have to play shorthanded.
Delorier is playing very well in goal lately, but Gerber is either back or ready to come back, correct?
Yes, Gerber dressed him as the backup last night. He was injured March 16th in a collision on a breakaway in Grand Rapids, and it was kind of a neck sprain, but he's practiced and is ready to go. I would assume we'd see Delorier again tonight. No use messing with a guy that's won three in a row and allowed just two goals in three games. But, yes, Gerber is back. We're currently still carrying three goaltenders. Brian Pitton is still here, and we'll see how long that they hang on to him just in case there was any sort of a setback. The Barons have been carrying three goaltenders, but Gerber has been given the green light to go again when ready.
Do you think Gerber will get the starts as the playoffs begin, or is it looking too far ahead?
Well, that's a little bit far ahead. You know, I was just kind of wondering if the Barons do clinch tonight, would they maybe get Gerber a game tomorrow in Houston? You know, the thing about the playoffs is the Barons aren't locked in to that eighth spot. So they could finish, you know, they seed the playoffs in an interesting way. It could be a little confusing to explain, but they could finish in their division anywhere from third to fifth. They won't get home ice advantage, but it'll radically affect what the matchups might be, based on how the other games in the league go this weekend. And if the Barons can win out and some other teams lose, they could end up third, and we might end up just staying down here in Texas and playing the Houston Arrows. So it's a little far off. I think they might want to wait and see, make sure they get in, and then make sure who they're going to play before they start worrying about those matchups. You know, right now, I'm totally speculating, I would think they'd want to, you know, not really upset the apple cart since Delorier has been playing pretty well.
And you may not know this, and maybe you do, because you obviously are very learned about the American Hockey League, but the last time a lone affiliate of the Edmonton Oilers made the Calder Cup playoffs was the Toronto Roadrunners in 2004. Were you aware of that?
You know, I can't say that I was. I was involved in a different strata of hockey in that era. But, no, that's an interesting note. I mean, obviously the Oilers' affiliations have meandered around over the years, and in fact didn't even have a regular affiliate for a while. But no, that's an interesting little tidbit.
It's a little misleading, too, because they were part of a championship team in Hamilton when they shared with Montreal. So there have been some good players come through, but I thought that was a little interesting bit of trivia. Speaking of which, you call horse races as well, correct?
Yeah, I used to. I spent 15 years in that position. It was essentially my first job out of school. I worked at Hollywood Park, and then for 4 years in California and then moved to the racetrack in Oklahoma City, which the DeBartolo family built in the late 80s. So I had a good run in that sport, but eventually I kind of yearned to get into more traditional, you might say, play-by-play. So if the opportunity ever acquitted itself, I might take a swing at racing again, but I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing right now.
Jim, you know what? We're going to have to put you on payroll. You're here every week, and you do such a great job. Thank you so much for your information, because it's very valuable.
Well, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play man, and I don't know if there's somebody who knows more about the American Hockey League. Can you believe that rule? I had no idea. I've been watching hockey forever, and I didn't realize that the AHL development rule was that specific about how many games you have to have played before the year starts before you can, you know, be a part of the roster, and you can only have a certain number of them. And that obviously is for development purposes. And I know the NHL has done that in the past. The old Central Professional Hockey League had a rule very much like that, but I didn't realize it was an American Hockey League rule as well. It's 1:40 coming up before the top of the hour. Jason McKee, Spruce Grove Saints coach, will talk about the Saints, congratulate them, and look to the future.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint. You can email us at nationradio@team1260.com. Well, last night, league president Craig T. Cripps presented the Interflex Cup to Spruce Grove Saints in front of the hometown crowd at Grant Fear Arena for a second straight season. And we have on the line with us the head coach of the Saints, Jason McKee. Congratulations, Jason.
Thank you.
That's the series against Camrose was, as advertised, very difficult. In your opinion, what was the key to the series, winning those first two or splitting in Camrose?
I think, you know, it's hard to say. I think both were obviously real big. I think winning their first game in overtime really gave us some momentum going forward in the rest of the series. And, you know, we just approached it one game at a time. And, you know, I thought the guys played real well last night.
One of the things that I'm impressed with your organization is that what appears to be a seamless adjustment to a new coach. Sometimes, even often, teams take time to adjust, and maybe even more than a year. But one last year, one this year. It must have been a lot of pressure on you, and it must feel real good to win the thing.
Yeah, it's obviously a good feeling when you win, you know, at any level. And I think the biggest thing is that in the last, you know, 5-6 years here, we've created a type of culture that we think will you know, produce success, and we've kind of stuck with that game plan, and, you know, obviously it's worked out very well so far.
How difficult was it during the year for you to replace Steve Hamilton, a well-respected coach in his own right, and to keep that program on track?
Well, you know, there's always going to be, you know, probably questions when there's change. There's no question about it. That's inevitable. But I think, you know, he was a good mentor for me, a good teacher. And, you know, I've got good people around me to support me as well. And I think that's very important. And, you know, the guys handled the transition very well. And, you know, it was pretty seamless. And, you know, like I said, the guys were real good about it. And, you know, we had a real good year so far.
Who are the key players for you on the Saints side?
It's hard to pinpoint one or two. You know, I group it into our returning guys from last year. They really carried us early on in the year and bought our younger guys time to figure out what we were trying to accomplish. And, you know, and when tough times come, I really rely heavily on those guys, and they've done an outstanding job this year.
And this was your third straight appearance in the finals, right?
It is, yep.
How many of those kids have been there all years, and how many of those kids are going to return for next year?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, probably two or three at least that have been, you know, there for all 3 years. And, you know, we do have some returning guys again. Probably I don't think we're going to have anyone with the fourth year. But, you know, the biggest thing over the last 2 years is we've, you know, had guys go through it now. And that experience is invaluable for us moving forward.
So you win 2010, 2011. The Spruce Grove Mets were champions in 75, 76. The St. Albert Saints won in 81, 82, 96, and 98. So the Saints are a very successful organization in the AJHL.
Yeah, you know, they've got a long storied history. There's no question about it. And some real good players have come through this program from years past and recently as well. And, you know, that's, you know, it's a very strong organization that's, you know, devoted to developing players, and you know, that's our biggest concern, is making sure that we're making you know, guys are moving on to the next level.
Now that the Interflex Cup is done, you move on to the BCJHL winner, and that is who won in the BCJHL?
The Vernon Vipers.
Okay. Do you, obviously, you know, you've been concentrating on this series and the previous one. Do you send scouts out? Do you have a good look at the Vernon Vipers? Do you know what they're all about?
Well, obviously, being in a different league, we're a little bit unfamiliar, but we'll do our homework for sure, and try and be as best prepared as possible. We played Vernon last year in the Doyle Cup, so there's a little bit of familiarity there, and you know, it's not so much an unknown for our guys this year, and I think that experience will you know, really help us out moving forward this year.
When does that series start?
It's going to start Friday in Vernon.
Okay, and you, when are your home games? Do you have that slotted?
Yeah, it depends on the series. If there's a, you know, it's going to be next week sometime. Depends on if one of the first the teams sweep the first two games, it comes back to Alberta. If there's a split of the first two games, then you play game three in BC and then come back to Alberta. So it's kind of a different schedule. So it's hard to predict as to when it's coming back, but it will be next week sometime.
What's the schedule for your team? Do they take a few days off before getting back into practice, or are they right back on the ice?
No, we had them back on the ice today, and you know, we've got lots of work to do, and I think that's the biggest thing, is the guys understand that, and they're really excited for the next challenge.
And one of the things about the AJHL that's always impressed me is the number of kids who are on scholarships, NCAA, and some who head out to CIS as well. How many kids do you have right now who are either on scholarships or looking for scholarships?
Last year, I believe that our number was 14, and this year we're at 5 confirmed, and I would say that we're going to be in the double digits when it's all said and done here.
Wow, does that lead the league?
I would have to say that it last year for sure, I would say yes, and I'd say in the last few years here, we'd have to be right in the top, no question about it.
Absolutely. You know what? Congratulations once again, Jason, and thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right. That's Jason McKee. Spruce Grove Saints, they are a pretty impressive organization, having won this year and last year, and of course are going on to play the Vernon Vipers. A very interesting organization, and if you don't get out to catch the AJHL very often, you should, because it's terrific hockey, and as a resident of St. Albert, it just breaks my heart that the Saints left. But I'll get over it eventually. I'm a Montreal Expos fan, St. Albert Saints fan. Had a lot of disappointment in my life, but that's okay. It's 1:51. We're going to get to a couple of emails here before we skip out this afternoon. We are, by the way, at the Pint at Nation Radio, live at the Pint, Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260, 109th and Jasper, every Saturday. And you can always email us. Once again, our email address is nationradio@theteam1260.com. This comes in from Steve saying, hey, LT, I am fernally in the Larson camp, and then trading up as much as possible to get a falling Sean Couturier. He's apparently been dealing with mono and still put up a high point per game. Defensive hockey fills a huge need. You know what? And that's a very good point. You know, mono is one of those things. Mark Pouliot had it the year the Oilers went to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2006, and I don't know that he was ever the same player again, and maybe that's a negative for Sean Couturier. But he had mono this year, and it really did impact him. It may have made him less impactful at the World Junior Championships, and on the times that I've seen him on television and some of the scouting reports, he has gone down as a prospect and could, because of the injuries and because of mono, he might be a player who rebounds heavily. I don't think you risk a first overall pick with that player with that resume, but maybe it's somebody you trade to 9 or 10. I think the Columbus pick might be in play because they don't want to draft another player and wait for the development. And you know, the Oilers do have some players that may end up leaving this summer. Halish Hemsky is one. Sam Gagner has been talked about, so maybe it's a trade up with the Los Angeles Kings pick, which I think is around 17 to 19 right now. Maybe you deal up that pick and along with a Hemsky for the Columbus pick in the top 10 and something else, obviously, because I don't think that's a fair trade. And maybe Sean Couturier is a guy that you look at. With regard to Adam Larson, you know, I'm really torn about that, and I have been for a little while now, because Couturier is the guy that I have really felt should be going number one overall. He's, if you're an Edmonton Oilers fan going back I mean, really, to Jason Arnott. Looking for a big number one center has been a thorn in this organization's side forever. Even Doug Wade, who was a terrific center, was a little bit undersized, although he had grit and he was just an unbelievable playmaker. But Sean Couturier may not be that big center that Edmonton Oilers fans have been looking for about 15 years now. So if you back off of that, Adam Larson, his offense may not be the kind of he might not be the kind of offensive player you look for in a number one overall. So unless you're going to trade down, Nugent Hopkins is very likely the most talented player available offensively for the Edmonton Oilers. If you draft Ryan Nugent Hopkins, then Gagné or Cogliano are very likely going to have to move to the wing, or maybe you make a deal. It's a difficult decision to make, and one that I think Stu McGregor is going to earn his money with this year. It's not a Taylor versus Tyler. There is a really difficult decision between Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Adam Larson. Larson is playing big minutes in the Swedish Elite League final. He's a guy who may be a lot more NHL ready than Ryan Nugent Hopkins, who is a slight guy but has terrific skill. But in making that decision, if you end up with a player in Adam Larson who really doesn't have the offensive side to his game, and you know he didn't have a great season in the National Hockey League this, or in the Swedish Elite League offensively, 8 points during the regular season, although he's scored a few more in the playoffs, and last year he was more offensive, it's something they're going to definitely have to look at. Has he not been playing on the power play in the Swedish Elite League? Unlikely that he has with his point total. And I'll tell you what, if you're drafting a guy who is defense first at number one overall, it's very rare and it doesn't usually work out for you. So Ryan Nugent Hopkins might be the guy after all. And I say that with the understanding that all this year, Sean Couturier has been my guy, the guy that I think the Edmonton Oilers should draft because he's a big, tall center and a two-way player. They may end up going to get, unbelievably, another somewhat undersized forward to go along with Sam Gagné and Gilbert Brulé and Alex Hemsky, who is, plays a big game but is injury-prone because of the style that he plays, and he's not a big man. The Edmonton Oilers, in terms of their young players who could end up being power guys or physical players, are Magnus Pajärvi, Timo Hartikainen, you name the next guy. It's a need, and Sean Couturier may not be the guy, but they're still going to have that out there. And that brings us to Gabriel Landeskog, who may end up being number one overall as well. This is Nation Radio. We're live at the Pine at Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. Had a great day today. Want to thank our guests, Terry Jones, legendary reporter for the Edmonton Sun, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail, also Bob Ridley, a play-by-play man from the Medicine Hat Tigers. Enjoyed that very much. Looks like the Oilers drafts are doing very well in Medicine Hat, even though they've been injured over the last little while. Gene Principe from Rogers Sportsnet. We got his summer plans and a few items that may affect the Oilers this summer. Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons. He brings his slide rule and Gladiator, and we needed them today because we talked a little bit about the veteran rule, which I had no idea about, and I'm sorry I got us into that. And Jason McKee, winner, along with the Spruce Grove Saints of the AJHL Championship. We're Nation Radio. We're back next weekend, Saturdays at noon on Team 1260.